Hey guys, welcome to the Fit Dad Lifestyle Podcast. The Fit Dad Lifestyle is a community and supplement brand where fathers support other fathers throughout the journey of fatherhood. We believe that maintaining a healthy lifestyle isn't about crash diets and the latest workout craze. Instead, we offer dads the education, resources, and support they need to maintain a balanced lifestyle long term. There aren't a lot of dedicated community groups for dads, and we know that men are generally less likely to talk about the challenges they face in life. So we wanted to go above and beyond the meal plans and quick fixes and offer a way for fathers to communicate in a helpful, negative-free environment. Whether it's supporting your partner when a new baby arrives, balancing work and the kids, or just fitting in time to get your health and fitness back on track. This podcast aims to inspire, motivate, and encourage you to be the best father that you can be and the leader that your kids want to see you be every day. It's brought to you by Fit Dad Fuel. Fit Dad Fuel is our supplement range. Our supplement range helps support this podcast, the workouts, the online education, and the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to help keep everything as cost-free as possible for dads worldwide. Enjoy the episode. Here it is, guys. Hey, guys. Welcome to episode 121 of the Fit Dad Lifestyle Podcast. Today, we've got a special guest, Mike Diamond. So, Mike, father, author, entrepreneur, speaker, coach, and TV personality. Mate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, brother.
Mate, not a drama. Mate, originally from Australia, can you tell the audience a little bit about where you are now and how many kids you've got?
One boy, born in Perth, Western Australia. I was a Perth boy, and then I live in LA now. But I traveled all over. I moved to America in 97. Before the internet, I just landed in Miami. And just then from Miami, lived in New York for 10 years. After New York, I got tired of the cold. I thought I'll hit the West Coast. And then I went between Vegas and LA. So now I've got a house in Vegas and a house in LA, and I go between both cities.
Yeah, fantastic. Mate, we spent about 6 to 8 weeks traveling around America in 2017 with the family. And if this pandemic didn't happen when it did, I have a strong feeling we'd be trying to push that curve of moving over there ourselves. We just fell in love with the place. It was just amazing, and all on the West Coast side of the world.
It's a lot easier if you're an entrepreneur in America. It doesn't have a ceiling. So Australia's tough. Australia's a really tough market because it's just there is a ceiling. You know, there's minimum wage. You can't work off tips. There's a lot of laws and regulations and stuff. Like when I created my supplement company, I come up with a supplement. I go to a lab. If it gets approved, I'm in business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just got to get a trademark and go. In Australia, man, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to go create a supplement company. Do it. It's so expensive and hard. So it's, you know, for the entrepreneurial person, America makes it a lot easier.
Mate, 100%. With our Fit Dad Fuel subs as well, we spent 9 to 12 months working with the R&D team and the manufacturers to even bring it to market. Whereas the same thing of, you know, you go to America and you're like, okay, what's your, what do you need? And there's like a week later, you've got your first batch and it's like good to go.
Yeah.
Like, shit.
Yeah. I've created two new flavors of my Mind Focus Fuel. I came up with the ingredient. I tried it myself. Within 4 weeks, we're ready to go. The lab approved it. I made sure there was no, you know, problems. I went to a really good lab that I know all the athletes go to. It was easy. As long as I can create it, which I could, I was like, we'll have to go out and sell. And the thing about America is like this, you've got to remember, like someone said to me the other day, you know, when the pandemic hit, oh, well, these people are, you know, sick. I'm like, wait. I'm in California. There's 40 million people in California. There's only 28 million people in Australia.
Yeah.
I was like, so when something hits, on one end, it's bad. When it hits on another end, it's good. But you got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know what I mean? Everyone's looking for like unicorns and rosebuds. It doesn't work like that. It's a balance, you know? So you've got to like, it's just the way it is. You got to roll with the punches.
Yeah, mate, 100%. And I think that's one thing that people don't realize is the vast difference in size of, you know, like you said, just California alone compared to the whole, you know, country of Australia. And you know, I think it's why a lot of people just think, you know, they try and get to America and put a product out there and, you know, it's home run. You know, it's sort of,
that mindset of, you know, America is where it's at.
The trick is, when I landed in America, is I didn't think like an Australian. I thought like an American, and I had to build rapport. And my network has become my net worth. Yeah. There is no one. All my TV shows, I shot without an agent. I helped create Miami Inc. I got on New York Inc. I created Bondi Inc. and brought it back to Australia. I'm on my third book now, talking to the biggest agents, CAA. You know, I do a weekly show with Dave Meltzer, who's one of the top, you know, guys out there. That show is going to Bloomberg TV. So one thing that in Australia I found is that you get a degree, or when I was at acting school, you go to acting school, and there's a big gap between getting a degree and finishing college and working. And people sit in America, people don't sit. There's work that has no end. And the only reason I've got ahead of people is I just didn't sit. I didn't wait for an opportunity. And it gives you the ability. If you're willing to work here and knock on doors and grind, you get way ahead. But a lot of people don't want to put in the work. You got to grind here. It's hard because you can't live on like a big minimum wage. I remember when I was in Australia as a kid, I could work at McDonald's and get $30 an hour and time and a half. And yeah, it makes you lazy. You starve in America. But if you can separate the grind and really being focused, you move way quicker. Like you speed past people, but it's work. And I lived in New York 10 years. New York will hand you your ass. I was there for September 11th. Like, it was a battle. Every day you get up and you work, you know, no one cares. It's just work, work, work.
Yeah.
So, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, mate, you definitely notice that with a lot of the podcasts and a lot of friends that, you know, we've got in a mutual, I guess, a community as well. And mate, you're spot on the money. If you're not putting in that work, and it's not your 40-hour or 38-hour Australian work week, it's the 50, 60, 70-hour weeks, then unfortunately you're the middle to lower class over there, and you're just scraping by.
Look, here's the thing. Like, I'm writing my third book, and when I wrote my second book, I had 100 ideas, close to 300 speaking gigs in 1 year. I was doing 2 or 3 speaking gigs a day, okay? So I'm an interventionist. I got lucky when I got sober. The guy that got me sober was a pretty big celebrity, so I went into getting celebrities sober, but I made a business of it. So when I jumped over into speaking, I realized I got to grind. I got to speak, speak, speak. So I wrote a program that made it to the schools, and I was booked. I would go from one high school in the morning, drive 30 or 40 miles to the next high school. Never stopped. Pandemic hit. I created the Recovery Today podcast. I've shot 70 episodes with Dave Meltzer. I shot another series, which was 26 episodes. Wrote another book. So I've written two, I'm on my third book now, right? Had to get them edited. Now this third book, I have to write at least 28 hours a week. I have full-time clients. Yeah, I have full-time clients. Yeah. I'm up at between 3:30 and 4 every morning. I don't take a day off. I got to get the kid to school in the morning. So I get up at 3:30, meditate, read, stretch, work out, cardio, you know what I mean? Do some writing if I have to, do some edits, kid to school, work with clients from like 9, if it's Zoom or I go see them, till the kid gets picked up around, try to get back there by 1:30, then take a little break, and then it's straight through again. And I go to bed around 9 o'clock. I stop around 7 because I want that 2 hours with the family. But I get up at 4 and go till 7.
Yeah.
Mate, 7 days a week.
It's crazy. I got a very similar sort of work ethic to that. I'm up at 4 every a.m., go to bed at 9, and it doesn't really stop. Like, you know, I help out with the morning routine with the wife and the kids to school, and then it's to the warehouse, and then it's here till, you know, 1 or 2, then it's school pickup, and then it's back home, spend an hour or two with the kids, but then it's in and out of the computer and so on and so forth, but not 7 days a week. I sort of cap that at about 5 or 6 if I can. And mate, it's a game changer. That morning routine, like, I'm at the gym at 4:30 every morning. And the whole reason I tell this to the community is it's the only time of the day that no one can take it away from you. You know, the family's still asleep. You're not taking away from any time that you want to be spending with them. And, you know, life happens. There's no guarantee that that workout after work or whatever you're planning to do in the afternoon, kids get sick, works, you know, stay back later, have that meeting, X, Y, Z, you know, you're not guaranteed. So you can only do it in the time that I think is in your control. And I find that that time of the day is perfect.
And you get an edge. And I'll tell you why. When you get up that early, your brain is fresh. Because the more you move through the day, right, it's been proven because you're in a theta brainwave. Get up between 1 and 4, your brain is really alert. And you get great creativity at that time. You know, I do a lot of my business deals at 5 in the morning. Yep. All the big ideas I've had came at 3:34 in the morning. And I literally call people or message them at 5 in the morning. I wouldn't be on a TV show with Dave Meltzer unless I called him at 3:34 in the morning because I know he's up. Yep. And the people I know that are running it, they're up at 3:34. And that means I can get to them first.
Yes.
If you wait till 7, they're full. Their message box is full of people. If I get them at 4, hey, man, I've got an idea for this. Let's work on it. Bang. They get back to me. They're like, he's up. I'm up. That's the kind of guy. And that's where people don't get it. If you want to get, look, everyone wants to make the 1% and be the 1%, but they're not prepared to put in 99% of the work.
Right, 100%.
Do you know what I'm saying? We get older, definitely. There's no handouts. No one cares. You know what I'm saying? If you're not willing to do the work that has no end and work on yourself and be so good you can't be ignored, no one cares. There's too much. Look, here's a perfect example. Someone said to me the other day, am I angry that Jake Paul made $500,000 or $1 million? I'm like, why would I be angry at Jake Paul? And he's willing to go out there and get punched in the face. Yep. That doesn't bother me. He does not bother me. The kid's actually really smart because he's getting paid more than John Jones. And John Jones is probably one of the best athletes in the world.
Yeah.
So that says something about our society. So if you've got the balls to do it, go and punch him in the face. I don't care. Do you know what I mean? And that's why people go, oh, he's a disgrace. Why is he a disgrace? I don't care what he does. He doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I stay in my own lane. Have the purpose of what I want to do and don't listen to the noise.
Mate, I was listening to Dee and the boys on group chat this morning at the gym, funnily enough, and they were talking about the Jake Paul fight. And they mentioned one of the things, like he is creating a whole new genre or industry and a pathway for all these different social media people. Like, why would he go out there and spend a week making a YouTube video for, you know, $500,000 in ad revenue when he can go out and make $7 million on a fight in, you know, what ended up being 2 minutes?
Well, how about this? He is exposing how underpaid UFC fighters are.
100%. Yeah.
So that means the poor UFC fighters that take a beating with no health insurance, and these guys make no money while Zuffa, Dana White, and all these guys make all this money, say it's a disgrace. Well, what's really the disgrace? That UFC fighters are being really, it's the hardest sport in the world, being underpaid for that long.
Yeah.
Right? Because they say, I love when people say it's disrespecting to fighting. It's a fight.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fucking fight. Do you know what I mean? It's not like they're playing NFL football or AFL. Like you can't, you know what I mean? If you're talking about a skill like football, you know what I mean? You've got to go. You're talking about two guys throwing down. It's the most primitive thing in the world. And UFC is the biggest hybrid anyway. It wasn't like boxing that's taken years. But if they're going to do it, who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just people need to get out of their own way. And if someone does it to me, it's just I'm interested. It's curious. Oh, it's great. Doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me. Ben Askren's the smartest guy in the world.
Oh, mate, the exposure and how he's reinvented his career is just unbelievable.
Ben Askren is such a genius. His highlight reels is Masterful knocking him out and goddamn the other guy knocking him out, Jake Paul.
Yep.
People will want to fight him, and he walked away with $1 million. $1 million.
Yep. Yeah, no wonder he had that smile on his face walking through the tunnel after the fight. It was,
funny.
Very accomplished, and you know, you've got a hand in a heap of different things with what you're doing currently. How has fatherhood changed your approach on how you go about life?
Time and priorities. because my dad, I don't have a really good relationship with my parents, and I've spent more time with my son than my dad spent with me in, 20 years. I got out of home at 19. So it gives me a lot of purpose and priorities. So I set everything up to figure out how much time I need to spend with my son. I don't want someone to mentor my son. He's going to learn from me. He'll read all the books that I've read, libraries of books. And then when I find out what his inclination is, when he's about five, then I'm going to, get in those 10,000 hours with the right coaches, the right people, and give him that craft he needs to be a success and a good member of society.
Yeah. And is that in the school system, like in the American school system, or is that at home with you?
That's me. But it's my choice. Look, there's good schools here, but it's what I need. Look, if the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and young men, especially young men, because men in America, young men in America shoot up schools. Angry young men shoot up schools. Girls don't do it. So I deal with high-risk kids. I deal with young addicts. I deal with celebrities, that they don't take care of their kids. I got to get them sober. So the one common thread is that people don't spend enough time, unconditional time with their kids. So I make sure if I have to do a speaking gig, I'll take my wife and kid with me. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't want to book myself out because I can't get back that time. People think you can't, your nanny doesn't do it. It's my responsibility. That's why I have one kid. And I'll be honest, I couldn't have two kids with the amount of work I do. I was like, one kid is good. I can take care of him. I can make sure he gets what he needs. He comes first. Cause if I don't put him first, all the money is bullshit. When I'm going to be the richest guy in cemetery with no friends, I don't want that. So he gives me priorities. I make sure everything is structured around him.
It's an interesting, outlook, because I'm sort of in that same point at the moment with my children. I've got one who did the daycare, did the kindergarten. He's in grade 2 at the moment. Loves school. My middle child, Tanner, he is 4. Didn't go to daycare. Refuses to go to kinder, and he's more inclined to come outside and help me around the yard, or come here to the warehouse and pack orders, or take photo, he just wants to be involved in everything we do. And he's I think that we'll do homeschool or something the equivalent, and teach him stuff that he actually is interested in, and whether that is going to gymnastics down the road, or is going to the boxing gym, or is learning XYZ of whatever he's interested in at the time. And he just does not have any interest in anything to do with school or daycare or anything like that.
That's good parenting, but because you're aware of it. Because what people don't understand is that Da Vinci and all the great masters through the Renaissance movements, their parents actually sent them off at 5 years old, and they got mentors and masters to learn their craft.
Yeah.
They're like, you need to go learn with the master. So, if you're 5 years old and you're around someone that's really skilled, you're going to pick up some really good stuff. So his inclination is to be closer to you, probably take over the family business, but be an entrepreneur. So don't kill that. Work with it. That's brilliant that you have that insight. You know what I'm saying? And he's at 4 or 5. That's where you put in those hours. Because if you start teaching him now, by the time he hits 15, he's got a head start by miles.
100%.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's why when you look at, they study the Eastern European countries for years, they were so good at gymnastics. What they did is they would go around Europe, and they would, at preschool, they would say, can anyone do a handstand? And they'd line the kids up. If one kid could do a handstand, they took him at that age and threw him straight into gymnastics. Because if you can hold your weight at that age, you're fucking strong.
Yeah.
And that's how they started. So the fact that you're aware of that is brilliant. So homeschool him and get him what he needs and give him good mentors and play to his strengths. Don't put him in a box. Look, I am writing my third book. I'm undiagnosed dyslexic, and I got D's in English, and I can outwrite most of the best authors. And I've got one of the top editors. I had to get in with one of the top editors, and he's a prick because he works me, but I can match him because I read a book a week and I study. If someone would have pulled me aside when I was a kid and said, "Oh, you're dyslexic, let's work with you." You know what I mean? I wouldn't have been drinking and doing drugs at 12 because of what was going on. Do you see what I mean? So it's amazing that you've got that insight. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's funny because the other week, about 2 or 3 months ago, they both wanted a telescope. It was the new thing that they were watching or whatever. So I said, right, next couple of weeks, we're going to do some jobs around the house and save up your pocket money and get you a telescope. The old fashioned way, the only way I thought. And they said, how about we just do what you do and we can take some pictures and you can just see the money coming on the phone, on the Shopify app, and then we can get the telescope like tomorrow. I'm like,
so great.
Rightio. So I'm like, so what do you want to do? And they're like, oh, can we have a t-shirt like yours? So we sat there on Canva, we developed this like dinosaur t-shirt and we sold it to all the dads. And anyway, $500 that night later. And we're like, okay, let's go get your telescope tomorrow. That's great. Yeah. But they had no interest because they see me on the phone, on the laptop, on, you know, sending stuff in the post every day. And they're like, well, I just want to do what you do. Can we take some photos? So we went down the local park and they were like taking photos of each other. And that was what they wanted to do. You know, but
they want to be around you. It's so good.
Yeah.
That's magic. That's really good stuff. You know what I mean? To have your kids that want to be around you. You know, they're moments that, you know, I never got growing up. My dad would come home after 12 hours. And if he was having a good day, great. If he wasn't, and I was playing up, my mum said, give him a whack. I'd get the shit kicked out of me. And then I'd be like, oh, I've got to go to school. You know what I mean? The fact that you're spending that time with your son's just amazing. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, mate, I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Mate, is there a family ritual that you guys have every week with the demands of, you know, how busy your week is and your schedule? You know, is there something you guys sort of do every week or every fortnight? Like maybe fish and chips down at Santa Monica Pier, or, you know, going out for a movie or something like that?
Not really. Now, because of COVID, it's been so weird. And we've been on lockdown for so long. But my wife and I, we spend so much time at home. We spend a lot of time together at home, even though, no, we don't have like a ritual. We go see the in-laws. They're close by every week. But what I used to do until the COVID got really bad is I would run with him in the stroller every morning.
Yeah, perfect.
I would get up every morning and we'd go for a run. And that actually started because he was preemie. And I wanted to give my wife more sleep time. So I was getting up 3:34. And then as he was getting stronger, I'm like, I'll throw him in the stroller and run with him. So she'd get that 3 or 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she was struggling with, you know, just women go through hell when they're pregnant. So basically, yeah. I think like he's seen me exercise all the time. So it's like I make sure I exercise and do a lot of my running with him personally. And I build a gym in the house so he sees everything.
Yeah, mate, that's so amazing.
I think that would be his ritual, yeah.
And you did, was it 30 marathons in a row?
30 half marathons.
And it was
after
that
stomach surgery.
Your son as well?
No, I wanted to, but it was such a hot day. It was August. I did it after stomach surgery with a hernia.
Yeah, right. Mate, that's a massive effort. That's huge.
That's pretty tough. And I have colitis. So it was pretty tough. Some days I was like, whoa, I'm going to shit myself.
Yeah. Fucking fat. Mate, we're in the old skins just in case it goes down the leg. Seriously.
You know, it's like someone asked me how I went from never running a half marathon to pushing the baby in the stroller to a year later running 30 in a row. And I said, you know, I like to tell people this, like, set a goal that's so big.
Yeah.
Work your ass off in your training, but then step into the action and just see what character you have to get through it. Don't give yourself a way out.
And was that the goal, 30 in a row, or did you just start with one and decided to keep doing it?
What happened was, after stomach surgery, the doctor didn't give me any shot. He said, you've got to take your colon out. You're going to die. Yeah. From the stomach cancer because your colon's shot. I lost, you know, 50 pounds. I was emaciated. And I watched a woman run 100 miles on a documentary. And I was like, how the fuck do you run 100 miles? Like, I'd never seen that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So the baby was in the rocker. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start training, throw him in the stroller and see what it's like to run a half marathon. So I trained for like 12 weeks, threw him in the stroller and it was fun. I was like, and I was a sprinter as a kid, so I never really got into running distance. And then I started to go down the rabbit hole of like, what would it be like to run 30 of these? And I found a girl to raise some money for, and then I entered the Guinness like pledge to break a record, which was like 22. So I was like, oh, you know, I'll just do the whole month. Fuck it. Like, everyone's doing these 30-day challenges. Let's see what it's like to run 30 in a row. And the weird thing was this. The first 5 days sucked.
Yeah.
Then after that, it was just like getting up in the morning. And I went to work every day.
Yes, yeah.
I didn't have any, like, I ran 30 days straight, like, every day. But last year, I ran a bigger challenge. I ran 150 days. I ran 10 miles a day for 150 days straight. 1500 miles. Someone challenged me if I could run 1500 miles in 150 days. I'll see if I can do it. And I did it. It was fucking brutal. Running 10 miles a day for 150 days. And I pushed the baby every day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was brutal. Mate, it was brutal.
Yeah, I do some of those 75 mile challenges with the Grand AC. And mate, that hurts enough doing those in 30 days, let alone, you know, the 150.
Yeah. It's tough. Running is it's honest.
Yeah.
It's honest. You get out there against yourself and you're just like,
yeah.
You know, 100%. it reveals your character. It's good for you.
Mate, definitely. Mate, if you could go back to Mike Diamond on day one of fatherhood, let him know one thing that you know to be true today, what would that be?
It's a really good question. Show up and have patience.
Yeah.
Just show up and have patience. Like, you can figure it out. I think people don't think they have the resources to figure things out, and they're not patient enough. And I think if you just show up and have patience, more is revealed.
Mate, I love that. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things, isn't it? Patience. And we had a new baby 2 weeks ago, and it's like with a 4-year gap. Yeah, thank you. And yeah, with a 4-year gap there, it's like getting that patience back, you know, and going back. It's like going back to day one, really, because you just lose so many of those different skill sets, and, you know, it comes back. And the wife is absolutely amazing with everything she's doing, but it's
you know, the biggest lesson I've learned living in America and being lucky enough to shoot TV shows and write books is that people don't give themselves enough time to process things. So I always say, I use a technique where if you're stuck, right, in anything, you're obviously looking for some kind of desired result. When you're doing something, maybe you make a shirt, it's not selling. Maybe you create a product, it's not selling. Maybe you're having a disagreement with someone. There's obviously some friction. So I step back from it and gather information. And the information may be first going to another person that's more experienced than me, read a book, watch a podcast, something. Just gather information, because the information you have right now is not serving you, right? It changes your perspective. Second thing you do is incubate on it. Just sit on it. And incubating to me is going for a run. Some people, you know, lay in a bathtub. Some people have a shower. Some people go for a walk. But give yourself time to incubate. Then what happens after the incubation period, you're going to get inspired. Now, once you get inspired, you want to be creative, and you don't want to judge the creativity, and you want to write down ideas and just flush them out. The fourth thing you do is you do realistic critical thinking, right? So you go back then and you give yourself time to plan it out, right? And that's what people don't do. So I've never got writer's block. Because if I want to write something, I gather information, I read, watch podcasts, then I sit down and incubate, and then guess what happens? I start writing, get inspired.
Yeah.
And I don't judge it. I just get it on paper, the first 4,000 words. Then I give myself time to just break it up. Do you know what I mean? And it's a creative process that people are like, I'm stuck in this relationship, or I'm stuck, I don't have the right purpose. I'm like, have you given time to sit with that and work through it, or go to someone more experienced to help you work through the problem? People don't. They just react. They go. They get angry. They're stuck. They just keep getting more stuck. And they don't give themselves enough time.
Mate, some great tips and, you know, great advice. I think it's something that you struggle to do with, isn't it? You get in the trap when you become a father that you've got no time left, and those goals, dreams, aspirations that you had pre-kids no longer exist. And a lot of people throw them out the window. But
yep.
I find that, you know, with dealing with the amount of fathers that we do now, from, you know, fathers at day one to fathers who have got, you know, kids at high school, I mean, university, is now the regret kicks in, you know, because 20 years ago, I wanted to do X, Y, Z, and now I can't, because,
yeah,
you know, I think that that's one of the biggest things, is not letting go of those dreams, but how can I bring my family or children along for the ride and still achieve?
Amazing. You know, yeah. And I think it all comes down to values. And having really good core values, setting boundaries, and having rules to those boundaries, values. So what I mean by that is, like, you know, people could say the word respect, right? I want to be respected. I'm like, okay, but what does that mean? Yeah. Because, you know, you could have a boss and one employee says the guy's disrespectful. And you're like, okay. Goes to another employee. What do you think of him? He's fine with me. Okay. Why is he disrespectful to the other person? Well, you know, I come into work and he just doesn't even say hi to me. Oh, well, what does he do? He's just like, he just says, oh, nice to see you today. And that's it. I go, so what do you expect? He goes, well, I expect people to tell me I'm doing great. And I'm like, oh, so your rule for respect is you need people to show you a certain way to feel respected.
Yeah.
Ask the other person, what do you think of the boss? He's great. He pays me good. He leaves me alone. Doesn't bother me at work. Ah. So you've got two different personality types. You have someone that needs the affection and attention and someone that doesn't need it. So they both value respect, but they have different rules. So what people don't do is they don't have core values, but they don't know the rules they're playing by. And if you know your rules, like for me, I have a rule. I'm sober, right? That means I'm not going to drink or do drugs, right? I respect myself and my sobriety. So it doesn't matter how much money you offer me, or how good looking the girl is, or whatever it is. I'm like, I don't drink and do drugs. That's my rule. Yeah, but no, I don't drink and do drugs. So you see what I'm saying? And people get off course when they don't have those values and rules. Do you know what I mean? So my values and rules are to provide a certain amount of comfort for my family, spend a certain amount of time with them, no matter what. It doesn't matter how big the pay gig is. Someone offered me an intervention the other day. It's a lot of money. It means a $10,000 job, but I had to go to Alaska. I'm like, I'm not going to Alaska to do it. They're like, why? I'm like, I'm not doing it. My wife had stuff to do. I need to be with the baby. I'm like, it's 10 grand to ship this guy. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I don't need the 10 grand. Do you know what I mean? And so I early on realized that where I'd fallen down and I started when I was using too much is I didn't have good boundaries. My values and my rules weren't good. So people would disrespect me, but I was disrespecting myself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was blaming other people, not taking responsibility. Do you know? So it starts with me. And if I can hold true to my values and rules, then I don't disrespect myself and I don't disrespect my family.
Mate, it's a hard one to grasp, isn't it? It's finding that, you know, inner, I guess, purpose and, you know, reasoning why to, you know, have those boundaries and rules and then be able to then display it to the rest of the world and then go, no, this is my limits. These are my left and right of arcs and I'm not venturing outside of those.
Yep.
And, you know, the peer pressure, I guess in the younger years, it's a lot easier when you're a bit more established and a bit more mature and a bit older, but that 20 to 30, you've got people pulling you from, you know, left, right, and center. And I think if you can get it through, you know, that period, then it becomes somewhat easier.
It's also harder when you're younger because you haven't lost a lot.
Yeah.
You haven't lost a lot of money or time because you haven't earned a lot. Do you know what I mean? So it's hard because you want opportunities. So it's hard to kind of sort through the shit. You know, you get people that promise you the world, then they kick you in the guts. And so I think it comes time, and that's why you can't buy experience. You know, going through it and going, yeah, I've done that before, or I know that kind of deal. Or, no, I'll do it myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't, when people ask me, can I work with you or can you mentor me or can you coach me? And I'm like, well, hold on. You really want me to coach you or mentor you? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, do you know the kind of schedule I run? And then they're like, well, I go, I get up at 3:30 and 4 every morning. I grind. I go, if you want to be part like of my clique and my crew and get the opportunities to work with the people I work with, they're grinders. The crew I work with are grinders. They don't mess around. But if I want to make a phone call, or I want to close a deal, or I need to raise money, or I need to shoot a show, I mean, I'm calling people that are running the shots because I've worked my way. I've been in America for years, and I grinded. When everyone was taking days off, I stayed in the pocket. And so I tell them, are you, and then I get one or two people, they're good for a week, 2 weeks, and they're like, this is the work schedule? I'm like, well, you want these opportunities. People I deal with, I've got to call at 4 a.m. sometimes.
Yep.
I've done podcasts at 4 a.m. People call me up, can you have a podcast for me? Yeah, no problem. I'm up. Because it might be 7 o'clock in New York.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? And people are like, well, I'm like, this is, so I just, it's just reality. There's some, they're just dogs, man. They work hard. No excuses. Show up, shut up, get it done.
Yeah, mate. It's funny you mentioned about the podcast. I've got a podcast tonight at 11 p.m. That's scheduled to go for an hour. I'm usually in bed, like we mentioned at the start, about 9, up at 4. And that is because his studio time for the guy doing the podcast, who I respect, is from 6 to 7 in America tomorrow morning, or whatever, you know, time, wherever he is. And if I want to go on the podcast, which will be great for my business and also great for his, then match this timing. If it means you get 4 hours sleep tomorrow, catch up tomorrow night and continue on. You know, it's sort of, people don't see the stuff behind the scenes, and they hear a podcast and they hear, you know, like, I'll release this podcast in half an hour, but people don't know what time, where it was, how it happened. And, you know, I think that, you know, to be, you know, in that mindset of chasing that success, people, you know, really struggle with the fact that they have to work for it. You know, it isn't that overnight. It is 5-10 years of, you know, no praise, no pats on the back, no telling yourself that you're doing well, to finally get to that point where, you know, you can start, you know, flourishing, enjoying what you've built.
Well, here's the thing that people don't understand, right? So they always say, you do the work in the dark, you don't get exposed in the bright lights, right? But how do I know, or you know, how much effort it takes to move the needle? See, people quit before the magic happens because they don't know how much effort they have to move the needle. So I finished my second book, right? And I had big agents calling me, but agents take forever. So instead of waiting, I'm writing the third book.
Yep.
Now, I could be slacking right now because I've got a show that I'm shooting in July 11th that's going, you know, it's getting syndicated. Instead, I'm like, fuck, I'll write another book in 12 weeks. Called my editor up. Let's write another book. I've got an idea. So I want to have the second book. So why not go in with a 2-book deal?
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know what it's going to take to get the right agent. Even though I've got good agents in my pocket and good publishers, I may have to do a 10X. I may have to work 10 times as hard. And once, if I have to do a third book, I'm ready. Do you know what I mean? Like 3 books back to back, whatever it takes. You've just got to do it. And that's what holds people back. They don't know the effort they have to put out to get the result. So what they do is they get delusional. Oh, it's not working. Well, you don't know yet. You stopped working. So yeah, it's going to stop working. Do you know? And I think, and what I've learned over my experience is, for anyone listening, just do the work. Just show up. I only get opportunities because most of the time I'm the last man standing. That's it.
Yep.
You just around long enough, people end up picking you. You know, it's not about being fancy. It's about showing up and being willing to do the work.
Mate, I love that. It's, mate, yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's absolutely perfect. Perfect response. Mate, what advice would you have for fathers out there about achieving success with their own health and fitness, fatherhood, or even any entrepreneurial journey that they might be on?
I would say get up in the morning. You want to do breath work. I like eating every 3 hours. Cut out the shitty foods, cut out the processed foods. Do you know what I mean? Get some exercise in. It's good for your body, good for your brain. It's good for your mental health, spiritual health, and emotional health. I would say read. Get an audio book if you don't like to read. At least get 30 minutes of reading a day. Do you know what I mean? I would say go online now that we've got Clubhouse and all these things and join a group of men that like you like, that are successful, that you can hear some good talks, that give you more information. And I would say that don't wait to feel good. Successful people do the work no matter how they feel. Unsuccessful people want to feel good and want to feel right before they work. I don't worry about how I feel. I just do the work. And if I feel good, great. If I don't, I still got the work done.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you can just do that and follow the basics. Look, it's the basics. It's the base. People don't want to do the basics. Look, mastery is boring, and I'll tell you why. Floyd Mayweather never needs to throw a jab again, but every time he boxes, he throws thousands of jabs every day in the gym. He's always sharpening his sword. If you've got a great rugby player, a great AFL player, they're still going to do kicks. They're still going to kick. They're like, oh, I kick for you as well. I kick. No. They're going to stretch. They're going to kick. They're going to do sprints. They're going to warm up. And you take a guy like Ben Cousins, for example, who was a very good footballer, who got addicted to drugs and blew his whole life up, right? Because he stopped training and very talented. And he worked hard, but as soon as he stopped working, guess what? He got into drugs and his whole career went down the toilet. So it doesn't matter what we're doing. As dads, we've got to do the reps.
Mate. I love it. And mate, I highly appreciate you taking the time to jump on the podcast today. Where can people find you and what books, speaking engagements or shows do you have coming up that people might be able to get involved in?
Okay. So the book is 7 Steps to an Unbreakable Mindset. You can get it on Amazon. The_Mike_Diamond. That's my Instagram. And then Mike Diamond's LinkedIn, Facebook's Mike Diamond. If they want to try my supplement, it's diamondlifefuel.com. And then I do a weekly show with Dave Meltzer, which is just on his office hours, which will be going to Bloomberg TV in July and August or August.
Mate, I love it.
And that's, yeah.
Perfect. Mate, well, I'll make sure I've got all those in the show notes. So guys, if you're driving right now or at the gym, make sure you check out the description after you finish and you can get in touch with Mike and grab some of these subs or grab his books and watch his show. So, mate, highly appreciate it. You go enjoy the rest of the afternoon out there with the family and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, mate.